So anyway, tonight it's good to be here. And I, Stu, thanks for covering on Sunday. And he read that thought on to fully concede. I was getting it out. I'm old. Fully concede to our innermost selves that we're alcoholic. And another one I'm gonna do sometime is Step Zero, which is another one. There are 61 thoughts on there, and I just put out a new thought on becoming God conscious on Monday, and that's on the 11th step, the sixth sense. And tonight we're going to finish up family afterwards. We have about 4 pages to go. We're on 129. And there's some, I have a couple new people that are really trying to do the deal, and they're trying to integrate their early recovery with their families, and they tell me about it, and it's difficult. It's really difficult for all parties involved. And there's really some great information in here. One really helps on how we do that. I just want to review, because Mark asked me to. It's his fault. On page 130, just this one paragraph has so much in it. It says, those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe, they're talking about people who come to the program and they really find the God, and they're excited about the steps and their relationship with God. And some of them go overboard. And the few pages before talks about how they drive the family crazy. All they do is talk about how they found God and blah, blah, blah. And the family doesn't want to hear about it. They just want to see changes. It says, this dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose. And, you know, we lived in a dream world when we came in here, didn't we? We were playing God. We had all these resentments and fears and things that weren't really true, and we have a great sense of purpose. So ask yourself, what's your great sense of purpose today? What is your purpose today? That's a good question to ask yourself. Remember, it tells us on page 77 what they thought our real purpose was: to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and others. And so that's what I try to keep it simple. I want to just be of maximum service to God and others, and if I'm doing that, I'm loving my neighbor like I love myself, and I'm loving God because I'm loving his children. And it says, a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. Now, isn't that what we do the rest of our recovery? We keep growing our conscious relationship with God. And when I return on Sunday night, we'll read powerful pages 86 to 88 on how we improve our conscious contact, how we inventory at night, our prayers and meditations during the day. It says, we have come to believe he would like to keep us, our heads in the clouds with him, but that our feet ought to be firmly planted on earth. It's a great line. So what he's saying is, I could talk about God and my relationship, but what am I actually doing? Am I practicing it? Am I practicing it in my walk? And just having it in my mind, but not acting on it and practicing it won't change me. It says, this is where our fellow travels are, and this is where our work must be done. So are we carrying out God's work in our lives? These are the realities for us. It says, we have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. And I don't think I can have a life of sane and happy usefulness without a powerful spiritual experience. I think they go hand in hand. Then there's another suggestion. He says one more, but he's like me. There's several more coming up. Whether the family has spiritual convictions or not, they may do well to examine the principles by which the alcoholic member is trying to live. And we hope they'll be interested in that. And they'll be interested in what are your principles, but maybe you could just show them by how you are rather than talk about it. They can hardly fail to prove these simple principles, though the head of the house still falls somewhat in practicing them. One thing that's guaranteed, if you're new in recovery and you're talking about how you love AA and the steps and God, as soon as you make a mistake, they're going to say, well, you know, you go to those meetings and you look at this, you know. Nobody laughed, but it happens. Has that happened to anybody in this room? All right, now they're laughing. They can hardly fail. Nothing will help the man who is off on a spiritual tangent. so much as the wife who adopts a sane spiritual program. So they don't tell the wife what kind of program to have, but they want a sane spiritual program. It really helps, making a better practical use of it. Then this next paragraph, they talk about the changes in the household when the husband comes back or the wife comes back. It says she had really become the head of the house. She's often obliged to treat father as a sick or wayward child. Even when he wanted to assert himself, he could not, for his drinking placed him constantly in the wrong. Mother made all the plans and gave the directions. When sober, father usually obeyed. Thus mother, through no fault of her own, became accustomed to wearing the family trousers. I think that's true. We don't realize it a lot of times when you come back into the home. Father, coming suddenly to life again, often begins to assert himself. Well, that's threatening, right? It causes trouble. And unless the family watches for these tendencies noticed not in him but in each other and comes to friendly agreement about them. So there has to be patience. I wrote, it takes time and you have to be patient, all the parties involved. And isn't that what we're supposed to practice all day, love and tolerance? And it says on page 83, it says, with the family each day we pray for what? Love, patience, kindness, and tolerance for the family. Drinking isolates most home from the outside world. Father may have laid aside for years all normal activities, clubs, civic duty, sports. When he renews interest in such things, a feeling of jealousy may arrive. See, people become self-centered when they're dealing with a self-centered alcoholic, and then they have their ideas about how things should be, and then they get resentful that you're giving more attention to somebody else. The family may feel they hold a mortgage on dad so big that no equity could be left for outsiders. Yeah, you're not going to pay that one off. Instead of developing new channels of activity for themselves, mother and children notice the word demand that he stay home and make up for the deficiency. So you can see how that conflicts arise. The alcoholic's trying to live a spiritual life and the family hasn't forgiven him yet. And they have ideas on how he should be to make up for how they feel they were harmed. At the very beginning, notice it says the very beginning, the couple ought to frankly face the fact, this is a great line, that each will have to yield here and there if the family is going to play an effective part in the new life. They have to yield. We have to yield what? My old ideas, my ideas about how things should be. Yielding. Yielding means you let go, you let the other one go. And so that would be a good thing to talk about if you're newly back in the home. How can we yield our ways so we can work together so we can have some peace? It says, father will necessarily spend much time with other alcoholics, but this activity should be balanced. That's another thing to talk about, a balanced life now. We were unbalanced when we were drinking, right? And now we have to be balanced so that we give everybody enough time. And that's hard to do in the beginning. New acquaintances who know nothing of alcoholism may be made in thoughtful considerations given their needs. We're always supposed to think of the needs of the others. The problems of the community might engage our attention. And though you have no religious connections, they may wish to contact or take membership in a religious body. Now here's another good paragraph. Alcoholics who have derided religious people, I've never heard of that in AA, have you? will be helped by such contacts. You see, we should never block anybody out from helping us or helping them. We shouldn't have any old ideas, our old ideas. We need to let go of them. Being possessed of a spiritual experience, the alcoholic will find he has much in common with these people, though he may differ them on many matters. If he does not argue about religion, notice what they say, he will make new friends and be sure to find new avenues of usefulness and pleasure. He and the family can be a bright spot in such congregations. Notice this, he may bring new hope and new courage to many a priest, minister, or rabbi who gives us all to our troubled world. And why? Because they can see where we were and where we've come. And if we're not an example of the power of God, I don't know what else is. And it says, we intend the foregoing as a helpful suggestion only. There's nothing obligatory about it. As non-denominational people, we cannot make up others' minds for them. Each individual should consult his own conscience. Remember, each individual has their own conception of God, and we have to respect that. It says, we have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things. We have been dealing with alcohol in its worst aspect. But it says, we aren't a glum lot. You hear that a lot. That's where it is in the big book on page 132. We laugh a lot about things that other people should shake their heads if they say that here. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We would hate to have somebody come here and feel that we were glum and that we felt doomed and we were unhappy and miserable. Why would they want to come back? We want to welcome everybody here. We want to tell them that they can have a new life and a life of happy. We insist on enjoying life. Well, you know why? Because it's the only life we got. Why waste any more time? Remember, tonight we were studying forced debt. We squandered the hours of our lives in resentment, right? We had a hopeless and futile existence. Why waste any more time? We don't have much time left, and so I insist on it. When I get afraid, I just say, I don't want to waste any more time on that. We try not to indulge in cynicism over the state of nations, nor do we carry the world's troubles on our shoulders. And we probably shouldn't talk about politics. It doesn't say that here. When we see a man sinking into the mire that is alcoholism, now notice these words, sinking into the mire, we give him first aid, right? We have to give people first, that's what we do, and place what we have at his disposal. So we give him first aid, and then we give what we have at his disposal, and after he gets the first aid, then it's his choice whether he's going to pick it up or not. For his sake, we do recount and almost relive the horrors of our past. But here's a good warning. I have to remember this. But those of us who have tried to shoulder the entire burden and trouble of others find we are soon overcome by them. I know sometimes if you get too involved in helping somebody, you start to take on their burdens. I know the birds shaking their head. People know. We start to get so involved, and then we want to fix their lives, and that's not our job. Sometimes it can't be fixed, you know. It's something that's not within our power. It's not our job. So we think cheerfulness and laughter makes for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the pack. You know, we talk about some of our escapades, and we're all laughing. And somebody would come in and say, well, I don't think that's very funny, but why shouldn't we laugh? See, you're laughing now. The guy says, oh, I took that highway. I should have taken the other road, and I got that DUI. And we're all laughing, you know. We think it's hysterical, you know. Drove off the road. We're all laughing, you know. It's funny. We have recovered and have been given the power to help others, you see. Isn't that wonderful? Anybody think that that's a great gift? Anybody get depressed about anything? Read that line, we've recovered. And we have given power to help others. Everybody knows that, in fact, I would say we all, I know I do this, we forget how lucky we are just to be where we are. And sometimes we'll worry about something that didn't happen, or it's not going our way, or somebody's bothering us. And we just have to stop and say, gee, I'm lucky I'm alive today. You know, I'm lucky I'm here. Look at all the stuff I have. So we should never stop being grateful to God. Everybody knows that those in bad health and those who seldom play do not laugh much. So let each family play together or separately as much as their circumstances warrant. Here's where this line comes. We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. You hear that a lot quoted? It's on page 133. I believe that. Does anybody else believe that? We'll open up. People can talk. It says we cannot subscribe. So you get a subscription. You usually pay for a subscription. So they say we cannot subscribe to the belief that this life is a veil of tears. Though it was once was just that for many of us. So that's another thing. Look back to where you are today, from where you were when you came in. That moment of complete defeat. But here it is. It is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid then, I like this, the deliberate manufacture of misery. And I made my own misery. I don't know if I deliberately did it, but I thought it was the only way to live. We made ourselves miserable, right? But like this, it says, if trouble comes, and this is when we're sober, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence. Isn't that what it says in James about tribulations? Somebody knows the quote, they'll say it later, but it says your tribulations make you stronger, and you use those to get closer to God, and how you handle them shows your relationship with God. So I see tribulations as an opportunity to grow spiritually. And it talks about that sixth sense that we have with God. Now about health, it says a body badly burned by alcohol does not recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking. I love this. Twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. Can take a long time, can't it? And we get frustrated with ourselves. I know I'm working with somebody who's very frustrated with themselves. They can't, they're thinking and they can't. It takes a long time. We've really abused our minds and our bodies. But we are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restorative. I think that's true. Remember, it says if you straighten out spiritually, then you straighten out mentally and physically, right? When the spiritual malady is overcome. We have recovered from serious drinkings are miracles of mental health. And notice the word miracle. It is a miracle. I mean, if you've been in AA a long time, you see how few miracles there are. And I'm a miracle. I know I am. I mean, only God could do for me what's happened to me. And other people could talk about that. And there is no way to fix me without God. But we have seen remarkable transformations in our bodies. Hardly one of our crowd now shows any marked dissipation. Are there any dissipations in here? That was a joke too, nobody laughed. But this does not mean, got him off tonight, but this does not mean that we disregard human health measures. They're gonna take the microphone away from me. God has abundantly supplied this world, this is a good one, with fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Another thing is we shouldn't be other people's doctors, psychologists, or practitioners. Most of them give freely of themselves that their fellows may enjoy sound minds and bodies. Try to remember that God, though God has wrought miracles among us, we should never belittle a good doctor or psychiatrist. Their services are often indispensable in treating a newcomer and following his case afterward, and I think that's really true. The more support, the more help we get, the stronger we have reliance on things outside of ourselves. One of the many doctors, oh, I like this is where the sweet thing came in, the chocolate that you hear at some meetings. One of the many doctors who had the opportunity of reading this book in manuscript form told us that the use of sweets was often helpful, of course, depending upon a doctor's vice. He thought all alcoholics should constantly have chocolate. This was in the 30s, remember? The medical profession was, you know. I think chocolate's good. In fact, I think people in my office, they had candy, and every nurse had candy in the drawer. And if I want chocolate, I knew which drawer to go to and where to get it. And then I had my stash. And anyway, we're getting off here. Not drugs. I'm talking about candy. I had pretzels. Stop it. Yeah. He added that occasionally in the night, a vague craving arose, which would be satisfied by candy. You wonder if he might have been putting some of his own thoughts in here. Many of us have noticed a tendency to eat sweets and have found this practice beneficial. Now, they gave people sauerkraut and tomatoes. That's what Dr. Bob. And if that didn't get you thinking about things, I don't know what. Yeah. That's what they gave.
Jar in his house.
Yeah, yeah. Sauerkraut, tomatoes. All right. Word about sex. I think we'll skip this one. All it says is there are problems with sex when people come back together, and that you have to be patient, and things will get better over time. It says the alcoholic may find it hard to reestablish friendly relationships with his children. I think we don't talk about this enough, the difficulties. Their young minds were impressionable while he was drinking. Without saying so, they may cordially hate him for what he has done to them and to their mother. Notice they use the word cordially, so it's not a bitter hatred. But they have some anger and resentment about things. Children are sometimes dominated by a pathetic hardness and cynicism. So they're not convinced when you're sober 2 weeks that things have changed a lot. So you may not see that their attitude's different. Well, you can understand why, right? And they cannot seem to forgive and forget. This may hang on for months, long after their mother has accepted dad's new way of living and thinking. So what they're saying is it takes a while for the kids. And this is where living amends comes in. They have to see that you've changed in your behavior and your actions to learn to trust you again. I know it took a while, but you know, I have a great relationship with my daughter I'm going to see tomorrow. And for a while, she thought I was stupid and hated me. And now her husband says she doesn't do anything without calling me and asking advice, which I think is great. And she's great. And I had a good relationship with my son, even though he died 10 years ago. He and I, we had a good relationship. He knew I loved him, but I just couldn't, had no power to cure his addiction. But I felt like he knew I loved him, and he respected and loved me. And so I know that had been resolved. In time, they will see that he is a new man, and in their own way, they will let him know. So, you know, don't keep going to the kids and saying, do you still love me and forgive me and this and that. They'll see it in a while. You'll still sense it. And I think that's one of the mistakes we all make is we want to be forgiven, right? And remember, amends isn't about asking for forgiveness. It's about making things right. So how do we make things right with the family is our behavior is the most important thing. And how we, and people say it's not what your, it's how, what your feet do, not what your mouth does. What are you doing with your feet? What are you actually doing? And when this happens, they can be invited to join in morning meditation. Then they can take part in the daily discussion without rancor or bias. Now, you remember the people who wrote this book, they used to have quiet time. And they'd sit together, and they'd have quiet time, and they'd meditate. The husband and wives, they'd read a scripture, and they'd think about it and pray. And then you can invite the whole family to do it. We don't do that today because we're all busy, right? I mean, some people do, but most of us, it's very busy. Everybody wakes up, they got their agenda, and things are going. It says, whether the family goes on a spiritual basis or not, the alcoholic member has to if he would recover. Should probably read that every meeting. So, and remember, we looked at We Agnostics, the first page last Saturday. It says you have to live on a spiritual basis of life, dash or else, remember? And there are only two alternatives to face, alcoholic death or live a spiritual life. And so we have to remember that if I'm going to recover, it has to be on a spiritual basis. The others must be convinced of his new status beyond the shadow of a doubt. Seeing is believing. That's another way of saying what we were trying to. Most families have lived with a drinker. Actions, not words. And I wrote, faith without works is dead. And this would apply to how you are with your family. Can they see the fruit of your faith? Can they see the change in your behavior? Now here they talk about smoking. I got on the internet one night and I was looking up something about Bill W. or something. And somebody was saying how we were a cult and that this was... AA was a complete nonsense because Bill W. and Dr. Bob didn't stop smoking and Bill died of emphysema. Well, so I was thinking about that a lot. So let's just read this. He says, I'll make a comment. He's a heavy smoker and coffee drinker. He was overindulged. His wife commenced to admonish him about it. Well, that's not going to make us happy. He admitted he was overdoing these things, but frankly said he was not ready to stop. So his wife was one of those persons who really feels there's something rather sinful about those commodities, so she nagged. So when we get nagged, and her intolerance finally threw him into a fit of anger, he got drunk. Now, we know now that we never have any excuse for getting angry, right? And it doesn't matter what they did, so he could have said, okay, honey, I'm glad you feel that way, right? He had a choice. Just because she nagged him, he didn't have to get angry and drink. But you will if you're not spiritually fit, right? And it is hard. Anybody live with a nagger? We'll discuss that later. But it can be. We all have moments. God, I'm on a roll tonight, I'll tell you. He says, of course, our friend was wrong, dead wrong. He was wrong, you see. He had to painfully admit that and mend his spiritual fences. Though now he is now an effective member of AA. So that's really a powerful paragraph. He had a justified resentment, right? She nagged. He didn't want to quit. She's on my case. He got drunk. And then he had to admit he was wrong. And he had to mend his spiritual fences. Though he is now a most effective member of AA, still smokes and drinks, but neither his wife nor anyone else stands in judgment. She sees she was wrong to make a burning issue out of such a matter when his more serious ailments were being cured rapidly. So when you look at the chaos of alcoholism and the way people live self-centered, smoking and drinking alcohol is a little bit different than that. And then, you know, I had people who would fight. The patient's dying of lung cancer, and the family's fighting with them over the cigarettes. And I'd have to say, listen, they got cancer. Don't fight over it. It's not going to make a difference. And so... And then I don't think because Bill W. smoked that he didn't have spiritual relief of his alcoholism and a spiritual change. I don't know if cigarette smoking causes an unmanageable life. I don't know if it leads to that. It may at point if it affects your health, but you can't see it right away like alcohol. And I don't know if smoking cigarettes makes you self-centered and harm people. If it does, then you might want to quit. You see, it's up to the individual, but I can't speak for that. Same with drinking coffee. So their excuse that Bill W. and Dr. Bob still smoked, if they had this spiritual experience, they wouldn't have. I think that's a judgment on the people who wrote the article, right? And so that's an intolerance. And also, it was a different world. You know, at the AMA conventions in the 50s, they would give out cigarettes. And I'm old. That's on the recording, but don't take it seriously. But I remember at the movie theaters, they had the cigarette things on the back of the seats. Ashtrays on the back of the seats. Ashtrays. There you go. They used to have it on the. They used to have it on airplanes. I mean, we're getting off the track here, but we all have habits that we would like to do better. We have to decide if it's making us unmanageable or not, and is it separating us from God, right? And so I can't tell what other person is sinful or not. And the other thing is we have to leave people to their own decisions. We can't judge what somebody else should be doing or not doing. It says we have three little mottos which are apropos. And here's where you think, I think we've got them up on the wall. First things first, live and let live, and easy does it. And first things first means first seek ye the kingdom of God. And then live and let live, I think it talks about acceptance and tolerance. And easy does it is like live the world as a loose garment. That I made that up. You'll let me know about you.
Easy does it, but do it.
There you go.
That's right.
And it's easy to do it. It's easier to do it than to not do it. So I hope people got something out of that. It's a good chapter. And then next week, I think we'll either do some of the family afterward or just go to Vision for You. I mean, the employer. I did the employer before. I read it again. I'm not sure that I want to do a whole meeting on it. I'll see. I'll read it. I'll see what God says. If not, we'll go to the Vision for You, which is great. We usually spend several weeks on that. It's great, the history of AA, how we got here, especially page 164, a lot of you know and love. It's really powerful. So anyway, thank you, and have a great weekend.